It's okay if I love the song is on.
Yeah.
Firewood crackle in the fall air. Red dirt playing on the radio. Big Dipper hanging high up there.
Breathing in the bag, yeah. Little Chase Rice to bring us back from the break. And I have to tell you, I had the chance to meet Chase Rice when the Foul Life guys came into town. Chad Belding's friends with him, and Chase Rice came and hunted with us. You know, he's like a big country music star now. And I have to tell you, he was just the greatest guy. Wanted to talk hunting, and we had talked a little bit about alligator hunting.
Right.
And I was showing him some of the stuff I made out of alligator hide, because one of the things that's really cool to me is to be able to utilize everything from the kill, not only the meat, but the hides. And you do that in taxidermy, you do that in clothing. And I had made these case knife pouches out of alligator hide that when you pull it out of the pouch, it automatically opens the knife for you.
Oh, cool.
And Chase was like, man, that's really cool. He said, I do this bit on stage where I pop open a beer with a knife. Would it be cool to be able to open one with one hand? So I gave it to him. And he's like, what are you going to do? I said, well, I'm going to have my leather guy make me another one, you know? So I gave it to him, went to see the concert in Milwaukee, the Chase Rice concert. And he found me in the crowd and pointed up to me, gave me a thumbs up, and he pointed. He had the knife case on his belt during the concert. So
awesome.
I mean, you'll never realize the ways in which hunting, talking about hunting, and the products that come out of hunting and the food that comes out of hunting can tie people together, will you, Dan?
No, not at all. And, you know, you mentioned earlier how women are the greatest rise in hunters right now. And we're also seeing a rise in complete non-hunting people that appreciate, you know, you talk about homegrown food and organic food. There simply is none better. And there are people who want to get involved for the aspects of the protein and the aspects of the homegrown organic food, and none better.
You just hit on a quintessential point that I love to talk about right now. In the hunting world, there are opportunities to change minds, grow mindsets, and we are right now at the pinnacle of one of those, where philosophies from different sides of the spectrum are bending around and meeting each other. You just said it. There's nothing more organic when it comes to meat than organically harvested game. And, you know, let's be honest. If you go to a grocery store and you buy meat, that meat was raised in a scenario to be slaughtered to end up in the grocery store. Anything you hunt wild is living a free life, living a free open range life until you harvest it and bring it to the table. This is a real, you know, as the parents used to say in the 80s, this is a learning moment. This is a teachable moment.
Yeah, I mean, let's be quite honest. From the beginning of time, we're hunters and gatherers. That's how we evolved, you know. And the fact that we have gotten away from that, we've gotten to the point that people don't understand that a hamburger comes from a cow. You know, they don't quite get the relationship, you know. And so as hunters and gatherers, you know, we harvest our own game, we eat our own food. But I also feel like we have a responsibility to explain that to the non-hunting people, you know, in a very fair and objective way, without being condescending or without being, you know, critiquing what somebody else chooses to do.
You're taking the point that I was just going to make. Now is a time of opportunity, and somebody who doesn't agree with each other politically very often leads to people on both sides being defensive.
Right.
Now is not a time to be defensive. Now is a time to embrace somebody who's curious about bringing their own meat to the table. Now is a time to say, look, you may not have experience in this. Let me show you, and set aside the different philosophical disagreements you have, because you do have this in common. And we're at a point right now where we can cherish those similarities of bringing organic meat to the table. And it doesn't matter necessarily with somebody if I agree with them under any circumstances. If we've got hunting to talk about, we've got something to talk about for hours. And I think we as people who are dyed-in-the-wool hunters and the potential new hunters, from whatever background or philosophy they come, it's incumbent upon us to welcome them into that tent and welcome them into that fold.
100%. And, you know, and there is a flip side of that as well. It's like if somebody I meet or talk to is a non-hunter, if they're a vegetarian, if they're a vegan, I have absolutely no problem with that. I respect their rights and I respect their thought process. But then I sometimes take it one step further and say, I don't have any problem whatsoever with what you do. Why do you have a problem with what I do? Because I'm making a conscious choice to harvest my own game and to supply my family with that. And so that's where I think that conversation and people coming together, be more respectful of each other's opinions and views.
No question about it. Be respectful. And on the other side of it, I have to admit, there are some hunters, and I'm guilty of this myself, where I want to stand my ground sometimes instead of objectively looking at someone else's perspective. True. And I think in hunting, in life, in business, in sales, whatever.
In politics,
whatever sure. industry you're right. in, it is incredibly helpful to look at things through other people's eyes. And I think that is going to be what helps coalesce. Now, I'm going to change topics here because I know you've done a lot of hunting around the world, a lot, and some crazy scenarios in Siberian weather and everything else. But I think, is it fair to say one of your favorite things is turkey hunting right here in Wisconsin? 100%.
I mean, there's just, you know, there when you're in the woods with a tom and he's gobbling in the woods with you and you can hear him coming, getting closer and closer gobbling, I mean, it's just the most exciting thing. And then to see it, you know, you and I have seen it hundreds of times, you know, but to see it through somebody else's eyes that's never heard it, or when a tom turkey is drumming when they're really close and it's more of a vibration than an actual sound. And you'll say to the kid or the person next to you, like, do you hear that? Or like, no, I don't hear it. And then it's like, did you hear that? And they're like, no. And then all of a sudden their senses click in and they hear what it is. Right. And when they're drumming, they are close. You just got to see them, you know. It's like if that doesn't get you excited. Then
if you don't know what drumming is, it's when they hit like those muscles to puff that fan up in the back as hard and as tight as they can, there's a vibrating sound. And I honestly don't know what that vibrating sound comes from, but it's like a...
Yeah, it's like a... they call it spitting and drumming. It's like a,
yeah,
you know, and I think obviously I've never been in the mind of a turkey, but you know, in the wild, you know, the hen calls and the tom gobbles and the hen goes to the tom, and so you're trying to fool them and frustrate the tom and get him to come to you. And so he's gobbling as he's getting closer. Then he thinks, you know, I'm close enough. I don't need to gobble anymore.
Right. Well, that is a misconception. In the breeding process of turkeys, the tom does not go ultimately to the hen. The hen chooses.
Right.
The hen goes to the tom. So the toms will come close-ish out of curiosity or trying to find where the hens are. But it's ultimately the hen's decision. And so that plays into your decoy.
That's the
game
chess
too.
Game. That's the chess game of no when doubt. Do you move, when do you stay, yep. when do you...
And what have you got here with us? You brought in your box call with a bunch of hash marks on it.
Yeah, so you asked me to bring this in, so it's got a story. So in 1994, I got this box call. It's a grand old master Quaker Boy box call. And I shot a couple turkeys. And then for whatever reason, I thought, you know, I'm going to take the spur of a turkey. They've got this little spur on the end of their foot, and I'm going to make a notch on the box call because I think it'd be sort of cool. Maybe I'll get 6 or 7 notches or something, you know. And then I just kept doing it. And they're not all mine. Like the majorities are probably birds I called in for other people, you know. And I would just notch them. And to this day, I would have people come up to me and say, remember when we went turkey hunting? They'd be like, yeah, I'm number 77 or I'm number 83. They remember their number. So I actually counted this morning, and there's 116 notches on this call. That is a turkey that I didn't shoot them all, like I said, but birds we called in and got harvested, you know. So it's my favorite.
Oh, that's just fantastic. Why don't you take us to the break with a few little clucks on that thing? Give me your favorite call while you're out there.
Okay, well, you know, which is the hen saying, hey, come on over here, you know. And then when they get close, then we just sort of purr, you know, like a feeding purr. And then it's really nothing special. But
dang, I'll tell you what, though. Anybody can use a box call, but that's using a box call very well. When we come back, let's talk about the evolution of a hunter and get into some South Africa stuff. You're listening to Raised in the Shaw on 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, The Shaw. I'm Joel Clayfish. We'll be right back.